Okay. Then the material that in this past week's material dealt with the two types of Yiras Shamayim. Yiras Shamayim, in a general way, translates as fear of heaven, and that fear, as we've been seeing, can take two forms: Yiras Ha'Oinesh and Yiras HaRoimemus, right? Fear of punishment and what we call Yiras HaRoimemus. Maybe we'll call that awe. So I just wanted to take out a few minutes just to discuss each of the two different yiras and what they should mean to us. So first of all, is there any common denominator between them? There seems to be a little bit of a difficulty that we have a mitzvah of Yiras Shamayim, which is really one mitzvah, and basically what comes out from the Rishonim and the different discussions is that there are really two levels. Right? This comes up pretty clear because we see plenty of Rishonim giving both definitions. Right? We saw the Stira in the Rambam, that the Rambam in one place says Lirami Onshoy, and in the other place he says that no, it's supposed to be a much higher level of Yira. So yes, we understand that there are two levels of Yira. You're scared of the punishment, and then there's Yiras HaRoimemus, which we'll define more later, but we're talking about a higher level of what we'll call awe, just the awesomeness of Hashem's presence, even if He wouldn't do anything to you. So, are the two seem to be two completely different things. How can we say that they all come together in this one mitzvah? Where in the Torah itself do we see any implication of two levels of a mitzvah, or two types of mitzvah? So, the truth is that really no. In a sense, there is a common denominator. If you understand what Yira really means. Yira, as Avig Damili used to say, is from the Sherish of Reish Aleph, the Bali Diktuk. Often, right, in general, we assume a Sherish of a word to be three letters, in general. Right, the Sherish of a word is three letters, but the Bali Diktuk often show how really, in general, Sheroshim boiled down on an even more basic level, a more abstract level, into two letters, which is where there have become a lot of different, very interesting. Rav Hirsch is a big star in this area, where you see all kinds of inclusive, you know, all kinds of words that connect. Whatever it is, Rav Avigdor Miller said that essentially the word Yira or Yare is from the Sherish of Reish Aleph. Reish Aleph, which is also the Sherish of Ra'ah, to see. No, that's Reish Ayin. Ra'ah, as in to see. Meaning, in other words, that really what Yiras Shamayim is what we might call the next level of Emunah. Emunah, we said, means to live with the awareness of Hashem. Really, Yiras Shamayim also means awareness of Hashem. Just, it's a little bit of a more developed awareness. Sometimes, you can be aware that something's there. You can be aware that someone's watching you. But you're not really aware of the consequences of that. Let's say I have a kid who sees a lion watching him. Fine. He's watching the lion too. And then you have an adult who has a deeper appreciation of what a lion is, right? And for him, the fact that the lion is watching him means something completely different. It means that he better find a different location quickly. So, really, that's what Yira is. Yira is enhanced awareness. Awareness meaning awareness not only of the fact that Hashem is watching, but also awareness of the consequences, awareness of the significance of the fact that Hashem is watching. And in this sense, yes, Emunah and Yira, in a sense, we might say merge together in this way. Or put it a little differently. You might say that it's kind of like awareness. It's something that begins here and moves its way up. Right? And at some point you shift from Emunah into Yira. So, once we understand this, that really the root of Yira is what we're going to call enhanced awareness, right? Like we said, a lion. You don't have to explain to a person to be scared of a lion. All you have to say is there's a lion in the room. Once he's aware of it, he gets running. So then we really understand that the truth is that Yiras Ha'Oinesh and Yiras HaRoimemus have the same root. Really, they are the same. Really, it's the same thing, just that, again, it's an issue of more developed, of a more sophisticated level of it. But Yiras HaOinesh simply means that yes, I'm aware that Hashem is watching. Like the Rishonim say, when a person is tempted with an avera, that's when the mitzvah of Yirat Shamayim really comes into play in a practical way. That you have to realize it's not just that Hashem is watching and you kind of look at Hashem and sheepishly grin and say, sorry Hashem, not this time, but that no, if you realize that Hashem is more than just watching you and hoping you listen, but Hashem is capable of punishing you, realize quite how mighty Hashem is and how not kedai it is to be defying Hashem, to be flouting what He says. So that's that enhanced level of awareness. That's Yiras HaOinesh. A person realizes, not just is Hashem watching me, but Hashem is watching me and keeping track for the purpose of ultimately evening scores in a very exact way. Now, I think it's already understood that once we understand that that's really what the mitzvah of Yiras HaShamayim is, Yiras HaRoimim was simply another aspect of the same thing. It's all, when you appreciate who Hashem is, so the issue already becomes not that Hashem can give me a spanking. That, as we said, as we saw, the Rambam, Mesilas Yesharim, is a much more superficial level. But, right, when a person realizes the greatness of the presence that he's in front of, a person feels nervous or scared, apprehensive, to make the wrong move, even if there's no fear of punishment at all. But it's really all the same thing. It's the fact that he appreciates, not really all the same thing, it's not the same thing at all, but it's really all the same root. The concept is that a person is aware not only of the presence itself, but of the significance of that presence. And that could be to different levels. I give a mashal. I once watched Rav Kornfeld do a bris when Rav Yoshev was the sandik. Kornfeld is a very confident mohel. But when he was doing the bris then, his hands were shaking. Rav Yoshev was watching, and his hands were shaking. I'm noting that. Now believe me, if it came down to an arm wrestle, Rav Kornfeld could cream Rav Yoshev. He was more than 100 at the time. What was he scared of? He was aware of the significance of the presence. That's all it was. This really is the most basic mushel of Yiras HaRoimim. But before we go there, I do want to take a little bit of time just discussing Yiras HaOinesh in a basic way. Just in order to put Yiras HaOinesh also into the right perspective. Hashem punishes. And we're meant to be aware that Hashem punishes. And even when we're on the higher level of Yiras HaRoimim, Ava, etc., like we've seen, it remains a Iker HaEmunah, Schar V'Einish. A person cannot go through a life as a Jew without believing in Schar V'Einish, even though, yes, we might talk about a higher Madrega where that's not the focus of your Avodah, but it remains an Iker HaEmunah. And we have to understand what the idea of that is. Why does Hashem punish? Or let's start in a more basic way. Hashem put us into this world. He gave us a whole set of mitzvahs and averas. He wants us to do these things. He doesn't want us to do those things. What for? Does it bother Hashem? Obviously not. Right? In Tzodakto Matit En Loi, and like the Gemara says, does it make a difference to Hashem? The Gemara in Chulin says, make a difference to Hashem if you slaughter the animal from the front of the neck or the back of the neck. It's all the same to Hashem. Loi nitnu mitzvahs al litzaref le mesabrias. The mitzvahs are here only for our benefit, to perfect us and to enable us to receive what Hashem has in mind for us. What does Hashem have in mind for us? Well, Hashem created the whole world just in order to do chesed. Hashem does that chesed at many different levels. Hashem, beginning with ants, or beginning with even more basic things, Hashem does chesed at many different levels. But the world was created because Hashem was in a matzav where He wanted to do chesed. And He wanted to do chesed at many different levels, and He wanted to do chesed at the ultimate level. Meaning, kiviyachol, to give the maximum chesed that Hashem kiviyachol can give. But not everybody, not all of life, not all of existence was meant to be recipient of that chesed. It's only a small select group who were chosen to be the ultimate recipients of the maximum kiviyachol, of what Hashem can give. What's the maximum that Hashem could give kiviyachol against? It's funny saying these words, but what it really means is to simply tie us into Him. Hashem is the ultimate toiv. So Hashem put us into this world. We're not going to get into it now. There's a famous concept of why Hashem could only give that ultimate chesed if He puts us through this world. Why couldn't Hashem? We were in Olam Haba before we came down here. Why couldn't Hashem keep us there? If the whole purpose is just to give the ultimate chesed, it's in a very basic way, is a famous concept that the neshama could not enjoy chesed that it didn't earn. Meaning, we don't really understand that. We feel perfectly comfortable. You say you can't really enjoy something you didn't work for. Try me, I can. Right? But that's because we have a goof. That's because the goof has shortcomings. When you're talking about a neshama that's made out of perfect material, see, the more refined a person is, the more funny he feels being on the receiving end without giving anything for it. The neshama is more refined than the most refined person. The sensitivities of the neshama are the ultimate sensitivities. And therefore the neshama could not enjoy what's termed as nama de kisufa, bread of shame, meaning to just be receiving without having worked for it. And therefore, in order for the chesed that Hashem wants to give us to be the ultimate, the most it could possibly be, Hashem, kiviyochel, had to solve that problem too. How did He do that? Puts the neshama into this world for a half a minute. Half a minute, 120 years, not that much of a difference when you're talking in terms of Olam HaEmes and you see Netzach Netzachim in front of you. And basically, that's the neshama's opportunity to earn its permanent toiv. Now, in order for this to work, it has to be for real. I mean, what would happen? Like we say, Chazal say, people say, oh, Hashem understands me. Or Hashem isn't like me. Hashem doesn't have to be like that. You know, why does it have to be tit for tat? Why does it have to be so meduktuk that every avera really brings punishment? Couldn't Hashem, if the whole purpose is just to provide us with the ultimate toiv, so let's say we did do averas. Hashem is really just there for the purpose of providing us with toiv. Why couldn't Hashem just overlook it? Say that we come to the next world and Hashem overlooks it and lets us in anyways. Why couldn't it work that way? But the answer is obvious. Once we understand that the whole only way the neshama can enjoy the benefit of the next world is knowing that it earned it, if it were such that it doesn't really matter, you go in anyways, no neshama would be able to enjoy its char. Meaning once the first sinner does come up and Hashem says, Seder, gives him a wink and lets him in, the whole thing loses its significance for everybody, including that very neshama. That neshama couldn't enjoy it. This is how the Drosh HaSaran explains the concept of punishment in Gehenna. The purpose of punishment in Gehenna is so that the stakes are real. If the stakes are real, then the reward that you do earn, the schar that you do earn, is for real. It's not just a joke. It's not a game at all. You know that you went through this world where the stakes were high and the stakes were very real. And that falling meant really falling. Not Gehenna. Gehenna is not a pleasant experience. Through that, Gan Eden is able to be Gan Eden. Gehenna is what makes Gan Eden into Gan Eden. Because without that, it would again be compromised. If really the whole system were a joke, yeah, try, but if you don't manage, we'll let you in anyways, then there wouldn't be that ultimate Hanoi in Gan Eden either. And therefore, it's to the neshama's benefit to go and really suffer from what it went through. For the averus it did, in order to afterwards be able to go to Gan Eden and enjoy Gan Eden. So yes, Gehenna is very, very real. The punishment is very, very real. And it's a very basic element of our emunah. But once again, we have to realize that we're not in a business deal with Hashem. It's not business. It's all about Hashem's love. And it's all just about Hashem's chesed. And the punishment also is for the purpose of Hashem's chesed, which also makes us realize, the Talmud Torah puts it this way, also makes us realize that it isn't correct to think of Gan Eden and Gehenna as two sides of a scale. They aren't equal. Gehenna is a means of Gan Eden. Gan Eden is the ultimate purpose. Gehenna is a means of getting to Gan Eden. And therefore, for example, the Talmud Torah says, Chazal tell us, Ein avera mechaba mitzvah, vein mitzvah mechaba avera. Person might think, I don't want to go to Gehenna. So therefore, how about, how many averis do I have? 10 averis. So I'll give up 10 mitzvahs and let them cancel each other out. Nothing doing, Chazal say. A mitzvah mechaba avera and avera mechaba mitzvah. One doesn't cancel out the other. Why not? So here also, the Temei Dvarim says along similar lines, if Gan Eden and Gehenim would be on equal footing, two sides of a scale, it might make sense. But it's not. You'll give a mashal. The mashal, the Chafetz Chaim, in the time of the Chafetz Chaim, the yeshivas were struggling, and they were having a very, very hard time getting funding for the yeshivas. And one of the Rosh Yeshivas suggested to the Chafetz Chaim, no, maybe the Rebbe can arrange that we'll get the schar. Right? We know that Talmud Torah is immense. Maybe we'll get the schar of one day of learning we'll ask for in this world, and then we'll have enough money to support the yeshivas forever. Right? We'll cash in on one day of learning in this world. Have enough to support the yeshivas forever. And wouldn't that be a good deal? And then Chafetz Chaim, you can arrange that. So Chafetz Chaim said, I'll tell you what it's like. If you have a person who goes to the store, he wants to buy a candy. Candy costs 4 shekel. He only has a 5. And the storekeeper tells him, I don't have change. So the guy might say, you know, let's keep the change. I really want the candy and I'll just keep the 5. Storekeeper will keep the 5. Right? Is he a dishonest guy? No. He told him, I know. It's only, it costs 4, but you don't have change. The 5. Now what happens if a kid shows up with a $1 million bill? I don't think there is a $1 million bill, but a $1 million bill. And again, he wants to buy his thing of candy, and the storekeeper looks at the $1 million bill and he says, I don't have change for this. Right? So the kid says, it's okay, I really want the candy. Just take it, I'll take the candy. So the storekeeper tells him, it's cost 75 cents. Here you have $1 million. The kid says, hey, no, I want it anyways. What will an honest storekeeper do? He's not going to give him the potato chips. He'll kick him out. To take it with the kid's consent would be a terrible dishonesty. So Chafetz Chaim says, you're asking for financial support for all the yeshivas forever, for one day of learning. Hashem is honest. Hashem is just not going to do it. Right? You understand what the schar is in Olam Haba? So I mean, the schar in Olam Haba just way outweighs anything we can comprehend. The human mind can't begin to grasp it. So the Ramak says a similar pshat to why Hashem would not cancel out an avera for a mitzvah. Because if we think that the punishment in Gehenim is as bad as the schar in Gan Eden is good, it might make sense. I don't know if you can make such an equation. Right? Is honey more sweet than a tomato is red? I don't know if you can make those sorts of equations. But if it was so that it was equal degrees, it might make sense. I said, but it's not like that. It's not the way Hashem works. Gehenim is enough for a person to suffer in order to feel that he really paid off his debt. But it's incomparable. The level of suffering in Gehenim, which, again, let's not make any mistake about it. It's not a place we want to be. But it's incomparable with the level of pleasure of Gan Eden. And simply, it's just not a fair trade. So yes, it's important for us to be very, very aware that yes, there certainly is Yiras HaOinish. There certainly is Oynish. And the Oynish will not be pleasant at all. But at the end of the day, it's all part of the system that Hashem built for our good. It's not an issue of tit for tat. It's not an issue that Hashem deals with us like a businessman. It's all, once again, under that general umbrella of Hashem's chesed and hatov. That's as far as Yiras HaOinish goes. Now again, at the end of the day, we're told that is not really the place to stop. You start with Yiras HaOinish and Yichu HaSchar, right? But that's, you're really meant to move on to the next level. What is that next level? What is Yiras HaOinish? Let's try to put Yiras HaOinish into practical terms, because often it's discussed as just this high up concept that's kind of like, you know, Yiras HaOinish and Avas Hashem, these are things that only after years of Avodah, and basically we kind of write it off. It's not Negev for us. But let's try to appreciate what Yiras HaOinish is in very practical terms, and this is something we can start relating to. It takes avodah, takes thought, takes contemplation, but no, it's something that we can start relating to. So the truth is that the mashal gave before is the beginning of the idea. But I want to put it into better terms. The truth is that ultimately Yiras Hashem is meant to be, it's like the Sfarim say, who says it? I forgot who says it now. But whereas most years, right, fear is something paralyzing, Yiras HaOinish, Yiras Shamayim, actually can be something thrilling, something exhilarating, something that can fill a person with simcha. What is the mashal? What is the mashal of Yerushalayim, of this Yerushalayim that we're talking about? When we say an exhilarating sense of fear, an exhilarating sense of apprehension. So let's give a mashal of Ma'adav Adoyma. Of a person who is a practicing virtuoso, a person who is a practicing performer, he's been practicing for a long time, whether in the acting field, whether in the singing field, whatever it is, been practicing for years and perfecting his techniques and improving and fine-honing them, etc., etc. And this is all leading up to his debut. When he's actually going to step out on a stage in front of 50,000 spectators, in front of 50,000 people. Now, as the day is approaching, the guy is working really hard, and as the day is approaching, he's having a hard time sleeping at night. You know, it's 2 weeks before, it's a week before, and the butterflies are going nuts in his stomach. And on the actual day of the performance, it's first going to be towards the evening, but he can't eat that day, right? His insides are churning, and the guy's a nervous wreck. You can't even really talk to him, right? So then, see, the guy's a nervous wreck, and he's talking about how nervous he is, etc., etc. So you know what? The curtains are supposed to be drawn at 7 o'clock. At 6:30, you come to the guy and you tell him, "Look, I see this is stressful for you. It's hard. Skip it. We'll find somebody else. Don't worry. We'll get you a substitute." Will he skip it? This guy's been working towards this for years. That's why he's apprehensive, because he appreciates the magnitude of what it means to step out in front of 50,000 people, right? But this is what he's been working towards for years. He appreciates that. Why is it that he's so nervous? Because this is his chance for fame, right? This is his chance to reach greatness. This is the real thing, right? This is big. He's going big time now. He's stepping onto a whole new level of performance that is the biggest thing he ever did, and that's why he feels these butterflies in his stomach. On the contrary, that apprehension, that nervous feeling, is the most thrilling feeling he's ever felt in his life. When he's actually out there on the stage, yes, sure, he's so struck with what's going on that he might be shaking, might be sweating, but he won't give up that moment for anything, right? This is the most exhilarating moment of his time, of his life. This is the greatest point of his life. He wouldn't give that up for anything. This is what we're talking about when we're talking about Yerushalayim Emos. When we're talking about Yerushalayim Emos, what it means is when a person really appreciates who Hashem is and what it means that Hashem is interested in interacting with me, little me, and wants me to perform for him, kiviyachol, which is what we're doing. Right? Whenever you're doing a mitzvah of Hashem, so though Hashem is saying, "I want to see you do this for me." That is meant to be, yes, a feeling of apprehension, but an exhilarating feeling. But certainly this comes from, and this is, we got back to what we discussed before. A person won't feel this way as long as it's the same old Hashem from kindergarten, who was a very active figure in fairy tale-like stories from the past, right? It's like a kindergarten image of Yetzias Mitzrayim and everything, and we know that, yeah, he did that then, and now he's a guy who kind of creaks, he's the one who kind of creaks my salary every month. I wish he could produce a little bit more. But if you don't really have a proper appreciation of who Hashem is, you can't realize this. Yerushalayim Emos comes primarily from understanding quite who Hashem is and understanding quite who you are and how shocking it is that Hashem should be interested in having anything to do with you. And the fact that he is focused on you, when a person does appreciate this, the more a person appreciates it, the more apprehensive he's going to be, the more nervous he's going to be, nervous in a positive way, an exhilarated kind of nervous. That's what a person is going to feel when he's acting in front of Hashem. But again, yeah, for this purpose, you have to really, it's like we saw in the Kadmoinim, that you have to really be misboinin, you have to contemplate quite how big Hashem is, quite how little you are. Someone sent me a picture of a picture of Earth that was taken from a spaceship that I didn't get exactly, I don't know the physics exactly, but somehow or the other, I think that they were taking the picture, I think that's the vart, they're taking the picture from the direction of the sun. They were back to the sun, and they were taking a picture of Earth from I don't know how many miles away. And basically, the way the picture looks is you see the color, you just see rays of light. And I guess you have to be a little bit more astronomically familiar to really appreciate exactly the details. But the point is that they show you how there are these big, the picture you basically see is a few rays of light. That's the picture. And then they point out to you that in the middle of a blue ray is a pale blue dot, meaning that the shading is a little bit paler. And that's Earth. I show you that's Earth. The Earth is basically a little pale blue dot like this big from the perspective of outer space. Right? And the truth is, who knows if that's the purpose of outer space, in order for us to really appreciate how little we are. I never saw it.
It's a picture taken by Voyager.
What's that? Are you familiar with the
Voyager spacecraft? Yeah, the most distant picture of Earth.
Ah, that's the most distant picture of Earth there is. Oh, okay.
Well, Voyager's even further, but now they can't see Earth at all.
Ah, well, see, there you go. So, for us to figure out that us, you know, we certainly aren't so little. Our lives are very significant, and there's an awful lot going on in our lives. But you look at that little pale blue dot, and you figure that, well, I must like be take up at least half that dot. But even if even if it's a very small picture, when you realize that no, that's all of Earth, and you're somewhere out there, yeah, tiny you are. All right, I find it a little bit hard to relate to this, but I did have that feeling after seeing that picture. I had a different appreciation when I was on the plane, and when we were approaching the airport, we were starting to come down, and you start making out cities, right? You start making out the towns, and you have a bird's eye view of a whole spread. You see neighborhoods with the whole street network from very high up. And I thought to myself, I said, "Oh, in each of these houses, there's a whole drama playing out. Each of these houses, there's something very important going on, right?" But for me, it's wholesale. For me right now, it's wholesale. I see thousands of them in one shot, right? But inside each house, there aren't thousands in one shot. It's very, very focused. Whoever it is, you know, there's one guy fighting with his wife in one of those houses. And that's everything that fills the planet right now. But for me, it's one of a thousand, right? I see them on a wholesale scale. That's what we are. Think about that for a minute. Now think of yourself, with all the important things going on in your life, and think of how you look to the person who's up there, not in what you call the Voyager, not in the Voyager, but on an LL plane that's starting to descend. And you, with everything going on, not all that significant. Right? And that's once you're already in view. When you're out of view, you're out of view b'chlal. Right? So you have to realize, Hashem is bigger than all that. And Hashem is... who knows if that's why Hashem made outer space so vast? So we should be able to extrapolate a little bit and note how big outer space is to how small we are. And then think about the fact that, yes, imagine if there is some space being that can look at Earth in this way. What are all of us? We're sitting here in this room. Some people with beards, some people without beards, different lengths and slightly different shades. And our heights are not exactly uniform either. Right? Imagine someone looking at Earth from that perspective. We're all exactly the same. We are tiny, insignificant dots that can barely be seen. All exactly the same. Right? Or, I'll put it into the perspective. I had a short high school education. I basically made it through 9th grade. But I came away with a couple of gems from my secular high school education. One of them was a history teacher who told us, this is in a yeshiva, history teacher told us, You boys don't appreciate how insignificant you are, he tells us. Each of you is a tiny sliver in history. He said, think about the 1700s. How many names do you know from that period? 10? 15? But don't you realize that there were a million other nobodies who lived, died, were buried, and today they're just nothing? That's what you are just in this century. That was the point that he made. That stuck with me because it was a very depressing thought at the time, and I was pretty down about that. I don't think I was yet at the level to even determine to be George Washington, so that my name will stick around in another 100 years. But once again, that's another way of looking at it. Yes, what are you? Right? You're not even the guy in the headlines. If from all the people who make the headlines, five of them would be remembered in 150 years, and by then Mashiach will be here, but in normal circumstances. But yet, it's not true. Yet, it's not true. Hashem, for whatever reason, is interested in a relationship with you. He's interested in a personal relationship with you. Wants you to perform for him. And when you realize that Hashem has at his disposal, serving him all the time, billions of malachim, right? Each of whom, Reshus Chachma says, I don't know what this means, but we'll use it for our purposes, that malach is 500 times the size of the universe. I don't know what that means. I don't know how you measure malachim. But for our purposes, he has millions of them, right? And so how tiny are we? You start thinking about it in these terms, how tiny we are. And yet Hashem says, more than all the malachim, more than all the malachim, I'm interested in a relationship with you. I'm interested in a relationship with you. And what you do for me is more important than all those malachim, as tiny as you are. David HaMelech, it blew his mind. Like David HaMelech said, Ki yireh shamecho ma'aseh etzboisecha yoreach v'kerchevim asher koinanto. When I see, right, we talked about the vast universe, right? Yoreach v'kerchevim asher koinanto, the endless skies and the moon and the stars. Who knows how many of them are much bigger than our earth, and there are millions of them just shooting around. So, ma'adam ki tizkerenu v'benoesh ki tizkerenu. Why are you interested in man? David HaMelech couldn't understand it, but at the end of the day, Hashem says he is. Hashem says that yes, I value a relationship with you, and I want a relationship with you. So we realize that yes, little puny me. And the Chavos HaLevavos says to note quite how puny you are, and to realize the significance of the fact that yes, Hashem is interested in you. And the Chavos HaLevavos takes this a little further. He says, think about yourself a little bit. You are a putrid being who, if you don't shower after 3 days, what do you smell like? And when you, excuse me, but this is the Chavos HaLevavos. And when you go to the bathroom with a bad stomach ache, right? Okay, now we have it, it goes into water. But otherwise, what would it smell like? Right? What are our bodies? Our bodies are basically factories of disgusting filth. You need all kinds of, you need to be busy the whole kind, soaping and spraying and this and that just to keep your body from stinking. Excuse me. But again, I'm allowing myself to say these things in this way because that's what the Chavos HaLevavos does. And he says it's a very, very important point. Realize this a little bit. Why? In order to again appreciate how uncanny it is, or how seemingly unfitting it is, that Hashem, right, the epitome of perfection, should be interested in a being like me. But Hashem is. All this, the Chavos HaLevavos says, itself warrants an unbelievable sense of Hakaras HaTov. Forget about all the details of the chesed that Hashem does for us. When you consider who you are, and who Hashem is, and the fact that He's interested in relating to you, that itself magnifies all the chesed that He does for us so much more. Because Hashem wants anything to do with me, and He does for another chesed and another chesed, it's mind-boggling. When you think of it in this way, and you're actually ready to do something for Hashem, Kaviyachal, Hashem says, and I want to see you put on tefillin for me. I want to see you put on tefillin for me. When a person is really appreciative of all this, when a person really appreciates what all this is, and again, we're talking now in a half hour, but when a person takes out the time to be mesbainin, to contemplate who Hashem is, everything He's been doing for me, what the significance of Hashem is, how great He is, and I'm about to do something for Him, Kaviyachal, yes, a person should think about that a little bit. Think about the fact that right now, Hashem is more interested in you than all those billions of malachim who are saying Shiva. And on the contrary, He shows off to them. Sounds like a surprising thing to say, right? But Yisrael asher b'choy spoyer, we're saying anim imin, or the way it's paraphrased in Anim Zmirois, Yisrael bi ki chofetz bi. You ever think about those words? Those are mind-boggling words. Hashem glorifies Himself in me. Why? Because He desires me. It's mind-boggling. How does Hashem identify Himself? If Kaviyachal, you could get a business card of Hashem. What's Hashem's title? Certainly. What's that? That's right. Mentus in Brachas. That's it. The Rashban on the Tzulin in Brachas. That's right. So, Hashem's title. Well, let's see. What does it say on his adornment, Kaviyachal? So the Gemara says in Brachas that Hashem wears tefillin. What is tefillin? Tefillin is what we'll call Kaviyachal a badge, but more than a badge. It's like a person's medals, what show his rank, right? Tefillin is, we show quite who we are. It's our uniform, it's our rank. So Hashem wears tefillin, the Gemara says. What does it say in Hashem's tefillin? Our tefillin, it says, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Why? We put on our head, we're proud. We show off the fact that we have shaychus with Hashem. That's what we put on the tefillin. What does it say in Hashem's tefillin? Mikamcha Yisrael Goyechad Ba'aretz. Which means that how does Hashem kiviyachol identify himself? What is Hashem proud of? Elokei Shemayim Va'aretz. He's that too. But it's not how he identifies himself. He identifies himself, kiviyachol, as Elokei Yisrael. You can turn on the air conditioner. It's off. Just push on. See on? Okay. I didn't realize it was off. But he identifies himself as Elokei Yisrael. And not just Elokei Yisrael, but Elokei each individual of Yisrael. Elokei Hashem Elokecha. Which means that, to think about this, each neshama is very specifically created by Hashem, was planned since the beginning of the time, and there never were two neshamas. Each neshama is a whole Briya in itself. By the way Chazal put it, is Chayav Adam Lema Bishvili Nivra Olam, which means that Hashem would have made the whole world with everything leading up to your existence just for your existence. Which means that Hashem made a whole Briya for all practical purposes because, with the 5,000 years leading up to your birth, because Hashem was waiting to have a relationship with you. That's something that should be mind-boggling and awing, if you say that, or inspiring, whatever. And that's what the Rashba says. That's the pshat in the tefillin that Hashem wears, because yes, Hashem kiviyachol goes with on his head, saying, "The Yiddish people are my people." Yisrael Hashem b'chol yisrael. When we consider this, that Hashem kiviyachol pins all his hopes on glorifying himself in us. He has an entire universe out there. The sun is an astounding Briya, like the Kuzari says. But Hashem says, I could potentially get more nachas from a yid, more pride from a yid relating to me in the right way, that I would more quickly identify myself as Elokei, this Jew, than Elokei Hashemesh, Elokei Hashemayim, Elokei Oretz. That's how Hashem identifies himself. Elokei Yisrael. So we think about it in these terms. We have to realize that yes, any time we're doing a mitzvah, we're doing that. We're performing for Hashem in what is this most uncanny bechira of Hashem of us, meaning in the most unlikely, as far as we're concerned. Okay, Hashem knows what He's doing, but as far as we're concerned, this most unlikely scenario of Hashem choosing us. So we're so used to doing mitzvahs already. Oh, you're doing Hashem a favor. We suffer through this world in order to get paid in Olam Haba, and we're good Jews. But the truth is, when we're talking about Yiras HaRemimus, a person appreciates what it means that Hashem wants a shaychus with me. That itself becomes Olam Haba. That itself becomes Olam Haba. That's Yiras HaRemimus. That's why the Mesilas Yisharim says that yes, any time a person does a mitzvah, he appreciates the fact that he's performing for Hashem, and he does it mamish bira adah. Because, once again, you chap the significance of what's going on. And this is something that a person can be misboinen in and enhance every day, because there's no end to how much you can appreciate Hashem's godless, everything Hashem is doing for you. And that's the famous story of Reb Sadia Goin. Chavis Halvavos brings it without the name. Reb Sadia Goin was went on a self-imposed Golus. And he came to he traveled anonymously. He was world famous, but people didn't recognize him because there were no pictures. He was able to go through towns where people didn't know him and maintain anonymity. So he came to an inn which was run by a Jew, and the Jew received him very warmly. He was a very nice, good person, and he received all of his guests very warmly and nicely in the Sefer Panim Yafis. Rav Saadia Gaon got a very nice warm greeting like everybody else, set him up comfortably like everybody else, fine. Then while Rav Saadia Gaon was sitting in the inn, all of a sudden somebody from his hometown happened to walk through, recognized Rav Saadia Gaon, and he yelled out, "That's Rav Saadia Gaon!" And all of a sudden the place was mobbed, everybody heard that the world famous Rav Saadia Gaon was there, and everybody was coming and crowding around and wanted to ask, the Rabbanim came to ask their shaylas and brachas and etus, etc. It turned into a proper mob scene. Finally, when the crowd dispersed, the innkeeper came over to Rav Saadia Gaon, mamish with tears in his eyes, and he said, "I'm begging you for mechila." Rav Saadia Gaon said, "What? What's the problem?" So he said, "I didn't treat you right." "What do you mean you didn't treat me right? You treated me beautifully." He said, I try to treat every yid nicely, but if I would know who you are, it would be a whole different way of relating." So Rav Saadia Gaon, instead of being flattered, was actually disturbed. It got him thinking. And he said, "The truth is, this is how it is with us and Hashem. We should be doing tshuva every day. We should be doing tshuva every day and telling Hashem, 'Yes, I may have been mechabed you, but now that I know who you are, I'm mortified about the way I related to you yesterday.'" We're supposed to be gaining a deeper appreciation and understanding and awareness of Hashem every day. And therefore, Chavis HaLavis says, a person living in this way, all of his days are in tshuva, because they say, "Now I discover who Hashem is, how could it be that yesterday I was only mechabed so much?" And this is Yiras HaRemimus. Yiras HaRemimus means appreciating the fact, the magnitude of the fact, that Hashem wants to relate to us, and I relate with an exhilarated feeling, but shaking and quaking. Again, not because I'm scared that Hashem is going to strike me down with lightning, because I'm not going to do any averis. But with that constant awe and trepidation because of the magnitude, because of how immense, how awesome what's going on is. So for example, word mitzvah. Mitzvah is a command. Sounds like a technical thing, maybe even negative. These are the things that we have to do now. Olam Haba, we get our schar. But mitzvah, again, if we're going with the sheirish, is from the word tzav. Tzav is also the sheirish. Well, in modern Hebrew we call it tzevet. Tzavsa. Tzavsa means company, a team. A tzevet is a team, company. The word command, what's the connection between the word command and the word company, the word a group? The answer is that whenever one person commands another, that by definition means, I am interested in a relationship with you. You mean something to me. Now, in many cases, practically, it doesn't mean much. Right? If I command my Filipino maid to do something, sure, I'm interested in a relationship with her. I'm interested in an employer-employee relationship with her, and I want her to do my floor. Right? Seder. But Hashem doesn't need us doing any floors. He doesn't need our tefillin. So what's the significance of the tzav, of the fact that he's interested, again, he's interested in relating to us, and that's what's expressed in that command. Here it's the other way around. The command is only expressing that, yes, Hashem wants to relate to us. And when we appreciate who Hashem is, again, every mitzvah is simply, we respond to that call. Every time we're ready to put on tefillin in the morning, we put on tzitzis, we take it as, now I'm being commanded to do something. Hashem is saying, I want a sheiches with you. And I do that mitzvah with that mindset. A person really thinks about it this way, a person can actually feel heartbeats when he's putting on his tefillin in the morning. Don't just do it by reflex. So this is Yiras HaRemimus. This is Yiras HaRemimus. And the truth is that when a person reaches this level, this is what can lead a person to the level of what Chazal say. On the one hand, Yofa Sha Acha Shokur Asuach, right? One moment of pleasure in the next world is worth Kol Chayo Ilam Azeh. But Chazal also say Yofa Sha Achas Shok Tshuva Masim Toivim Bo Ilam Azeh Yisur Mikol Chayo Ilam Aba. One moment of tshuva. Tshuva, again, the way we just put tshuva means going closer to Hashem. And ma'asim tovim in this world can be more valuable than all of Olam Haba. Which means that when a person really taps into the experience of the privilege of serving Hashem, that can be more significant to him. Olam Haba is getting reward. when a person really appreciates what it means, how the malachim would give anything to have the privilege to be able to do something for Hashem, and you're here in this world, and Hashem is interested in what you're doing, the thrill can be so exciting that it's worth more to the great man than kol chayei olam haba. Rabbi Yochanan expressed that in Masechta Shabbos. He said, when a person dies, goes to Olam Haba, to his ultimate existence. But no, the way Rabbi Yochanan expressed it was, Hashem is not getting anything out of him anymore. Now, he's going, he's going to get all this char, v'chule. But when I'm in this world, I'm in a situation where I could actually give Hashem nachas. I'm in that mind-boggling situation, which afterwards is gone. And when a person really appreciates what that means, that's the way he expresses it. That's the way Rabbi Yochanan expresses it. As long as I'm in this world, I'm still in that matzav of yisporah bi ki chavetz bi. Hashem is mamish. I'm providing Hashem with a source of pride. Hashem is saying, ah, look what I have in my world. That's yiras ha'remimus. And yeah, sure, it's a sense of trepidation, but it's also an immense sense of fulfillment, an immense sense of gratification. It can mamish reach a level of mamish competing with olam haba when a person really reaches the right level of it. And that's also the pshat. Chazal say, "Al tiu kavod mamisham shemesarav amenas lekabel pras, lavu kavod mamisham shemesarav shalay amenas lekabel pras." We're supposed to reach a level where we serve Hashem without any intent of tzchar. How is a person supposed to reach that level? Does that mean that a person really reaches a level where he just completely detaches, he doesn't need to feel any sense of pleasure or anything? No, it's not the pshat. We're made, people are made to seek pleasure. But a person can ultimately get his pleasure. First he get it by anticipating olam haba. It's not so first. That also is ganz feine Madrege. But a person can go beyond that and actually get his whole fun in life, his whole pleasure in life, from the very fact that I am in that position to be doing what all the malachim look at enviously. I'm in position that Hashem is interested in what I'm doing, and that I'm providing nachas for Hashem. This all is the concept of Yiras Ha'remimus. And that, yes, a person can be enjoying it. A person can be getting pleasure out of it without the specific cheshbon of how much schar am I going to get. This is really what Yiras Ha'remimus is. And here we're seeing that actually, Yiras Shamayim is not a paralyzing kind of fear. On the contrary, Yiras Shamayim is the most fulfilling kind of fear. It's what can turn our lives, every moment of our lives, into meaning. When we realize that it's not just mitzvahs. That's the next level that Maseiach Yeshayahu takes it to. Yiras Chet. When a person lives his whole life realizing that Hashem is watching him. Hashem is watching him. We take it in a negative way. He's watching to see if we make up. Right? He's waiting with the ruler ready to strike. No, Hashem is watching because he's interested. Hashem is watching because this is where Hashem kiviyochol gets his nachas from. That's why he's watching us the whole time. He wants to see what we're doing. A person lives his life in this way. Yes, he's living with yira. He's living with the feeling, with a greater sense of trepidation than a person who's performing for 50,000 people. But that's a life of simcha. Okay. By the way, this week's